in this hour and the next. I have joining me, as I do every Thursday, my co-host on the Inside Scoop edition of the Leslie Marshall Show, Mr. Mark Levine. Hey, Mark. Not Marky Mark,
hello,
but ML.
Leslie.
Hello. How you doing there in D.C.?
Glad to hear you missed me while I was running for office.
I did miss you while I was running for office. We're going to have a lot of fun in this and the next hour because, you know, hey, it's, you know, another day. Somebody blows a gasket in D.C., and there's so much more to talk about each and every night. And so that people know, Mark is a former legislative. He is my co-host and partner in crime. He also sits in for me. He's a former legislative counsel to Democratic Congressman Barney Frank from where I grew up. He was my congressman, my mommy and daddy's and me when I grew up, and the House Judiciary, Homeland Security, and Financial Services Committee. Currently, he does host his own show. It's Washington-based. He has a radio show, a television show called The Inside Scoop, and the Ruckus Caucus on Pacifica Radio, WPFW 89.3 FM. He frequently appears on Fox, MSNBC, CNN, Fox Biz, and CNBC. He's tangled with Bill O'Reilly, not tangoed, on the right, and his Pacifica co-host on the left, and even me at times. Hey, Mark, I just want to ask, because I know some people might be curious, when you run for office, because of the Equal Time Clause, or maybe it's not just because of that, you can't host your radio show. You couldn't host my radio show, couldn't co-host with me every week, and you couldn't do your two radio shows on Pacifica Radio and the Washington-based Inside Scoop, or your TV talk show. Am I correct in that? And do they have legal obligations to hold those spots for you in case you don't, you know, you aren't victorious, which was the case this time, but I am very, very confident that if not next time, maybe the time after, but at some point that I will be calling you Congressman Levine. And I look forward to that, to be able to have a congressman on speed dial and home and cell numbers up. But
that would be very cool.
And I won't ask too many favors, I promise. Not too many,
so
maybe just one.
That's a fascinating question. I'll answer the second question first. They are under no obligation, but rest assured, my job is safe. They all want me back. They miss me. And while they're under no legal obligation to bring me back, they all have. So that's the good news and the easy answer. The first answer is actually a lot tougher question than you would think. I thought I knew this law better before I was a candidate, which was simply you have to provide equal time to everyone. It's actually a complex area of the law. And the short answer is it's not enforced, and so people break it all the time. The rules, as my lawyers explained them to me, were that before I was on the ballot, I could do whatever I wanted, which is why I could appear a little bit on your show after announcing, but before I was actually put formally on the ballot. After I was on the ballot, I could be a guest, but not a host, they told me. And as a guest, the station would be required, if they put me on as a guest, talking specifically about my campaign and focusing on the campaign, they'd have to have other people on as well, while at the same time they could have me on to discuss things other than my campaign. But even that turned out not to be true, because on the day of the election, I discovered that one of my opponents had been on MSNBC, in fact, was currently on MSNBC. I called MSNBC while he was on the air, saying, you had him on, now you have to have me on, and they basically said, no, we won't. And I went to my lawyers and said, hey, MSNBC had my opponent on and not me on. They called in MSNBC, and MSNBC said, don't do it. And then my lawyers told me that even though it is the law, it's almost never enforced. Wow. And there wasn't much they could do about it. And actually, a local TV station had five of the seven candidates on and did not put me on. We complained to them, and they basically said, nope, sorry, we're not going to do it. So the answer is, while it appears to be a law that at least I scrupulously followed, other people don't follow this law at all, and no one enforces it. So next time I run for office, I'm going to say, hey, don't worry about equal protection. No one enforces the law. It happened against me, so put me on the air. It's a longer answer than you expected, probably.
It's fine, because I wanted it to be comprehensive. So honestly, in a sense, Hillary being on book tour works in her favor if anybody tried to enforce the equal time if she were to announce her candidacy, because nobody can say, well, you had her on about her book, right?
I mean, it appears that this is a law that, while it's on the books, is pretty much not enforced at all anymore. Apparently, some recent court rulings have taken the sting out of it. And so many news organizations still try to be fair. Some do, some don't. But in terms of real complaints with the FCC, they haven't gone anywhere for many, many years. And I really didn't know that until I ran for office and found out the hard way.
I see. All right. Well, we have a lot to talk about tonight. And
we do.
I mean, oh, Lord, we have a lot to talk about tonight, and I'm excited about it. What do we have here? We have like six topics. We'll get to two, right? No, I'm just joking. By the way, I had a lot of compliments on our date last Thursday, just to let
you know. Oh, good.
Yeah. Let's talk about this border situation, and we're going to talk about possible compromises that have emerged. First of all, Mark, I think you would agree with me that if this were not a midterm election year with such a tight race as to who is going to keep or gain the Senate and control of the Senate, I'm not sure how much we'd be hearing, and if Speaker Boehner didn't want to keep his speakership, I'm not sure how much we'd be hearing about this and how many fingers would be blaming the president, because my homework reveals to me that the president didn't put this in play. Legislation back in 2008 put this in play. Corporations dangling carrots put this in play. And, you know, there have been kids. I heard a story about a kid who came here when he was eight. He's 14. I heard another, story about a kid who's been here, 8 years, which is longer than President Obama's been president. So first and foremost, children coming over the border, that's not just during Obama's presidency. It is in huge numbers with the president. Are people right to point the finger of blame at him, or has this legislation grown into what we see today and Obama's at the helm now?
But it's got nothing to do with President Obama. People need to understand that this, first of all, children have been coming across the United States border since we became a country, and even before then.
As a minor, without adults with them.
Well, that too. That has happened too. It has happened, and it certainly continues to. What happened was, in December 2008, George Bush was a lame duck president, and by voice vote, it was so popular that they didn't even take a vote. By voice vote in the Senate and the House, along with George Bush's signature, was a bill on human trafficking. And the problem was that, and still is, that you have these smugglers who bring these kids across the border and often abuse them and often mistreat them. And we've always had a policy in America, well, I won't say always because we didn't have it during the Holocaust, but since the 1950s, we've had a policy that if you can reasonably prove persecution, if you can show that you face a risk of death or great bodily harm in your home country, you get to stay in the United States. And that's a policy that I strongly support for humanitarian reasons. And if you study what happened in the Holocaust, you understand why turning away children to die in their home countries is perhaps not the most humanitarian thing we can do. And this isn't a liberal principle or a conservative principle. I think it's a humanitarian one. And I think that's why the law passed by a voice vote. This is all it did was basically make sure that people have due process, so they can go through procedures to make sure that they do face this legitimate fear of persecution. And if they don't, they can be deported. But if they do, they get to stay. I mean, ever since the 1960s, we've allowed Cubans who escaped Cuba to come to live here and get a green card in the United States. And even though certainly Cuba's under a dictatorship, and I'm not praising what Castro's done, I think it's reasonable to say that the kids fleeing Central America face far greater threats to their lives than Cuban youth do coming to America, unless they're specifically Castro opponents or something like that. So this is a long-running law and idea in America. This law happened to allow kids from any country except Mexico or Canada, where they can be summarily deported. I think we thought that if someone made it all the way here from countries not Mexico or Canada, they must have a pretty reasonable fear of persecution, so they get these hearings. The problem is we don't have enough money, because Congress hasn't appropriated enough money to actually have enough judges to hear these hearings. So the kids they might have to wait for a year for a hearing. In the meantime, they're put with relatives, and then they tend to become part of the undocumented. So that's why President Obama has proposed a $3.7 billion plan to basically fund the hearings that Congress said should be allowed back in 08. And the other thing, of course, that's increased, has nothing to do with the United States, but has increased the children coming in from Central America, is the horrific abuses going on in Honduras and Guatemala. The murder rate there, they're some of the highest murders in the world, and children are plagued upon by these gangs and basically forced to either join them and start killing people, or if they don't, then they're harmed themselves. And so you can see why people are fleeing to us. That's nothing to do with Obama.
No. I'm glad that you said all of that. You know, hang tight. We're going to take a break when we come back. We're not done with this issue because one of the things I think it's easy to say, children, children, children. But now we're starting to hear about some of those children, exactly why they came here, what their experiences have been and what they're fleeing. And kind of wondering where all those pro-lifers are out there. What about the life lives of these children, especially for those. We'll have to share some of the heinousness we have seen on Twitter these past days. Mark Levine is my co-host, former legislative counsel to Democratic Congressman Barney Frank, the House Judiciary, Homeland Security, and Financial Services Committee, host of the Inside Scoop and the Ruckus Caucus in Washington, D.C. We'll be back with him and you right after this. Follow Mark at Mark Levine Talk. Tweet us both. We'll share the tweets during the show. Don't go away. And we're back with Mark Levine. He is the host of the Inside Scoop and the Ruckus Caucus, and this is the Inside Scoop edition of the Leslie Marshall Show. Mark is my co-host in Washington, D.C. on the East Coast. I, Leslie Marshall, your host on the West, just on Thursdays in Hour 2. But tonight, Hour 2 and 3. Holiday week, Mark's been out running for office, Congress in Virginia, and glad to have him back, although I wish I could call him Congressman someday. Mark Levine is my co-host. Mark, thanks for holding. Welcome back. We're talking about things that are emerging on the border. We both agree this is not the fault of President Barack Obama, but it's convenient to blame him, especially for anything when it's an election year. Let's talk about some do you want to talk about the law specifically? Because in addition to being a talk show host and a future congressman, you are an attorney. And right now, as I understand it, the law mandates that children who are unaccompanied minors have to be detained. They have to be held for a certain period of time. They have to see an immigration judge. The backlog is years, and now there's a lawsuit in California against the Attorney General, Homeland Security, I think, USCIS, ICE, and ICE, et cetera, because, these children, I don't think people know, many times have no legal counsel, can't speak English, have no idea what's going on.
Well, and they certainly have a right to have all of that. They don't have all the rights, all the constitutional rights that citizens have. But I think that it's pretty clear from the law that they have a right to due process. Even non-citizens have a right to some basic due process. You know, you have a right to have a hearing and understand what's going on in the hearing. And that's right. The reason why they're not being heard quickly is because we simply don't have enough resources for immigration judges. And, of course, given the furloughs and sequesters and all the other Republican attempts to shut down the government and to basically starve the government of necessary funds, there are just simply not enough judges out there. So the judges are doing, I think, what the appropriate thing is, given that there are not enough of them, which is they schedule a hearing, they don't keep these kids in detention centers, which would be even more expensive, frankly,
right.
And, of course, incredibly inhumane for what are often kids who've been traumatized, and they let them go with relatives in the United States. And then, yeah, many of them don't show up for these hearings. And the answer is simply to provide enough judges to have hearings. Now, it is true.
Well, yeah, see, that's interesting. I'm glad that you say that, because one of the things that I wasn't aware of, quite frankly, and, you know, till this came up, I thought they were just being held in the detention centers. But no, there are times where the mother will come here, she'll sneak here. As a matter of fact, my former nanny, who had a green card when I hired her, want to be very clear about that. But when she first came here, she came here after her mother had left. She was 4 when her mother left. When she was 9, her mother sent for her and was allowed to. She came in, you know, legally. But there are kids in the, like you said, that they're released to be with a relative, but not all the children have relatives to be released to. We'll talk about that as well. But one of what you just mentioned, when they are released to a relative and they haven't gone to the immigration court and they stay for years and then they don't show up, that adds to the number of illegal immigrants in this country. So in other words, our legislation, in a sense, is creating our own problem or making our problem worse, right? Answer that when we come back, my buddy. Mark Levine, co-host here on the Inside Scoop edition of the Leslie Marshall Show. We're back. I'm Leslie Marshall. He's Mark Levine. He's my co-host every Thursday, Hour 2 on the Inside Scoop edition of the Leslie Marshall Show. Mark joins us from D.C. I am in Los Angeles. Mark and I were talking about immigration, and before we talk about what's being proposed and even possible compromises, Mark, before the break, I asked you a question. I said, answer it when we get back, because, you know, we had to, you know, it was our shortest segment. We had to take a break. So let's continue our discussion on this. There are children, like you said, we're basically feeding our own problem or creating more of a problem by having more and more people added to the number of undocumented workers or illegal immigrants in the United States due to this backlog and due to our current system and this legislation, right?
Well, I think we should remember there's just two aspects to this. One is the legislation itself, which, although it passed in 2008, there have been precursors that date back before even President Bush. There was one back in 2000. The legislation itself is designed to help prevent human trafficking. It's made to punish the smugglers, to punish the people who mistreat children or who sell them into slavery or sexual slavery or abuse them or so forth. And one of the things it does is it allows the trafficking victims to come to the United States, but also has them testify against the people who traffic them. So it definitely serves a law enforcement purpose as well. It's not just for immigration. The law itself would be fine if there were enough resources to pay for the immigration judges to go through the backlog. So the law caused the backlog, but there's an easy fix, and that's simply appropriate enough money to handle the backlog. It's not that the law is unworkable. It's unworkable without the additional funding.
Okay, so speaking of that, the president says, look, I need billions of dollars, as a matter of fact, $3.7 billion, to pay for this crisis. First of all, should the president have done something about this before? No. First and foremost, would immigration reform take care of some or all of this issue?
I think it would take care of a lot of the issue, because what immigration reform does is it gives certainty. One of the reasons why these cases take so long and one of the reasons why people don't know what to expect when they come to our border is because we have a hodgepodge of immigration laws that are extremely complex. And I'm a lawyer and I worked in the Judiciary Committee, which oversaw immigration, and still I cannot say I'm an expert in this, maybe an expert more than most, but immigration attorneys know far more than I do. It's an exceedingly complex and contradictory area of the law. And immigration reform would simplify the standards, and I think there should be one standard for persecution, for example. Instead, there's a whole hodgepodge of different standards, one based on religious persecution, and this particular one's based on human trafficking, and there are others based on totalitarian governments, and there's one if you're from Cuba, and there's different if you're from China. It's a mess. And so I do think that immigration reform would give certainty to the process.
Okay. So that first. Second, so then is the president wrong to be asking for so much money when money really is the issue? Money is even the issue if we want to build a wall like China did along our border with Mexico. And we'll get to securing the borders in a minute. Money is what needs to be thrown at this problem, you know, even though Republicans like John McCain want to call it a blank check.
$3.7 billion is not only for immigration judges. It is for things like border security. It's for a lot of different things. And for Congress to complain about the problem and then not appropriate enough money to handle the problem, it's kind of like saying, police, why haven't you caught these criminals? And no, we're not going to pay you your salary or give you the guns or uniforms you need. Congress is the problem. It needs to be appropriate. Look, the problem is growing through things that have nothing to do with the United States, through the horrific things going on in Central America is what it has been increasing. That's what's increasing the problem. And the way to deal with it is money. So either Republicans have to say this isn't an issue, or if they think it is an issue, they have to provide the funds to pay for it. Now, there's an easy answer, and the easy answer is leave the backlog alone, let the kids come in, live with their relatives, there'll be more undocumented immigrants in the United States, and stop complaining. But Republicans don't like undocumented immigrants, so if they want to stop them, they have to provide the resources to the president to stop them. That's simple.
Most definitely. Let's talk about some of these kids. We mentioned some of them have families here. I wanted to share a few stories. Mark, you may have some you want to add. I was listening to the story about three siblings who are in Seattle currently in a detention center. And so that people understand, Mark, you can go into this in more detail. When the children speak to the judge with a translator frequently, if they're not, you know, many of these children come from very poor areas of Central America and do not have English as a second language. They plead their case before the judge. They explain why they came here. And many of these judges may say, well, I believe them. And I don't think they should be sent back or deported. So, you know, I think there's an idea that every kid that goes through the court system is going to be, you know, put on a bus, or technically a plane. And that isn't the case. The other thing I heard is that the amount of planes there going into countries like Honduras, et cetera, are unbelievable. To think we're not deporting. We're deporting hundreds, if not thousands, of these children. They don't have the ability to handle the load that are being deported back in the country on their end. They can't handle it on their own. Well, you know, we can't just drop kids off at an airport. For crying out loud, they may not be Americans, but even the United States, although it makes me cringe when I see children traveling alone. I just saw it recently when I was coming back from New York. They have that tag around the child and they're put with a flight attendant. You can't just drop off 200 or 300 per plane groups of children in a country that is, like right now in some of these Central American countries, are just racked with violence.
Part of it is figuring out who we are as a nation. Remember, these kids are not just from across the border. This law doesn't apply to people from Mexico or Canada. They have to have traveled all the way from Guatemala or Honduras, which means that they've often traveled a very long journey. Oftentimes, these kids can be as young as 9 or 11 or 12. They're without their parents. They're scared. They're fleeing for their lives. Kids don't leave their parents in good times. Children don't want to leave loving parents. They want to leave only when conditions are so horrific that their parents and the children feel that that's the only way to save their lives. I think of the parents in Europe who sent their children before the Holocaust away. It's very rare that parents do that, and only in the most egregious circumstances. So, of course, many of them, are going to find that they have a fear of persecution. And then comes the rub. Then comes the question of who we are as Americans. Do we take the Statue of Liberty, the Emma Lazarus poem, seriously? Give me your tired, your huddled masses, poor huddled masses yearning to be free. Do we remember that we are a nation, 98% of whom have ancestors that aren't from these lands? And do we respect the fact that these kids are brutally treated and just want to live a better life? I love America as the nation of immigrants. I think it's what makes us great and unique. We're the only country in the world that's not based on a single ethnicity or religion or culture. I think that diversity is our strength. I love America as a home to immigrants. Clearly, some Republicans don't. But what they don't remember is that in the 1840s, the English opposed the German immigrants. And then in the 1880s, they opposed the Irish immigrants. And they opposed the Jewish immigrants. And they opposed the Italian immigrants. And lo and behold, each and every successive wave of immigrants has helped and built the American culture. And I'm proud of the fact that my great-grandparents were immigrants 100 years ago, and I want to give these kids a chance. And I understand that some people don't. And some of that is a gut question, really. It's a question of where your morality lies.
Okay. We only have a minute to break. I want to talk about some of these kids. We have a call, we've got tweets, and other things to get to. But not all of these children who come here without adults have adults here or family here to go to, right? I know we have a minute, but less than a minute. There are three siblings in Seattle, I started to say, that saw their mother and father murdered before their eyes. And the people that murdered their parents told them they were coming back for them. Terrified, they came here. They have an uncle in Florida who paid the smugglers. Get this. But that's all he'll do. He paid the smugglers, but he's got like a bunch of kids himself. He can't afford them. He can't afford to take care of them, feed them. Now, how they ended up at Seattle, I don't know. They're at a detention center there. So those are three children that witnessed, and these are three children under the age of 14 who witnessed. So the eldest is 14. And if you even could imagine the circumstances these children went through to get here, okay? They said they had to pay everybody, and if you didn't have money, you had to pay them a different way. I don't even want to imagine what that was.
Yeah.
To get here. One other one I do want to mention. There's a young man who was 15. He's in Guatemala. And in many parts of Guatemala, gangs have taken over. And if you don't join a gang, they will kill you. Or they don't kill you, they'll kill your whole family. So this gang kept coming for him, and he said no. And so they basically said, if you don't join us, we're going to kill your family. So his family said, you have to leave. And and knowing nobody, came to the United States. He's in Southern California. He said, I will do anything to save my family. Now, the gangs have not, basically, it seems that when the people flee, now the gangs are also taking advantage of this knowledge. The gangs can watch television too, folks, you know, have computers, and they know what's going on. If the person flees for some reason, they don't go and attack the family. Hopefully that won't change. So right now, he feels that even if he goes to jail, he's willing to go to jail to save his mother, his father, his siblings, his grandmother. I can't even imagine the amount of responsibility that child has placed upon himself due to circumstances. And he said he wants to be a great American. He wants to work. He said he'll work 7 days a week, 16 hours a day. He wants to get an education. He wants the opportunity. And that's what this damn country was built upon. Opportunity. Opportunity. You know, why, you know, I mean, seriously, not all our relatives came here through the front door. Let's not, you know, be cocky about this. We'll be back. Mark Levine is my co-host. We'll take your calls, share your tweets, and more on this very serious issue. Don't go away. We're back with Mark Levine, my co-host. He's on the East Coast in D.C. I'm on the West Coast in L.A. Mark, let's take some calls. Go to Michael in the Bronx, line 5. Michael, good evening. Your take on this issue of immigration and these children coming here without adults.
Hello, Leslie, and hello, Mark.
Hey, Michael.
Hi.
Hello, Mike.
You know, there's a few things to look at here. First off, we're talking about children here who really do not know anything about immigration laws. Only thing they're concerned about is looking for a safe haven. All right? So that's on a humanitarian perspective. But I want to call out these right-wingers for the hypocrites that they are, because why is there no concern about the northern borders as much as they're so concerned about the southern borders? Here's where the racism comes in, because everybody knows on the opposite of the southern borders are pretty much Mexicans and people of color. But no one bothers talking about the northern borders, which on the other side is mainly Canadians who are pretty much Caucasian. And the reason why I bring this up is because less than a year or two ago, there was a fugitive fleeing from Canadian police, and he crossed the border easily. No one was there to patrol it or what have you, and he made it down as far as Utah before someone recognized him and detained him before officials came and transported his buck back to Canada. Now, I've had this argument with some conservatives in the blogs and some of the chat rooms and what have you. They either come up with one of two things. One, there's nothing wrong with the northern borders. The southern border is the problem, and just totally ignoring what I point out. Or two, they say that, oh, we haven't heard anything about that, so it never happened.
Mark?
Well, most of the immigrants are coming from the southern border because they're coming from places, not even so much Mexico today. There's more people coming from Honduras and Guatemala even than Mexico, more children who are crossing the U.S. border alone. So I just think that's a more significant problem just in terms of sheer numbers. Technically, the law does not apply differently to the northern border and the southern border, but, we don't have... And also, it doesn't apply to Canada or Mexico. It only applies to countries other than Canada or Mexico. We can't have summary deportation from Canada and Mexico. So I think it shows right-winger hypocrisy for a different reason. It's the reason that Leslie pointed out so well. If you're pro-life and you oppose abortions, then you should take in some of these children. If you believe that we should have more unwanted children on this earth, then I think the first thing to do is take in those wonderful kids from Seattle that Leslie talked about. Because if your heart really goes out to children, and if you're pro-life, where are you in helping these children that need a home? And I would ask everyone who is pro-life to step up.
Thank you, Michael. Mark. You know, you just pointed out the second hypocrisy as much as I have pointed out the first hypocrisy. You know,
right.
Things that if you're going to be so much about immigration, border patrol, be about it the whole 100%. Don't be picking and choosing as to which of the boards you want to look at, because then I have and others have every right to call you, not you, but call them hypocrites and
Absolutely.
Then say that they're playing the race card again.
Yeah, Michael, and you do say that a lot, that they're hypocrites. Thank you for the call. Let's go to Dave in Humboldt County on line 1. Hey, Dave, good evening. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, friends. A longtime fan of both of you, and I've been a child psychologist much of my working career. And one of the things I think all of us kind of agree that the very greedy, extremely wealthy that, you know, want to feel that the next billion that they get will make them happy and they want so much more. But that kind of psychology, it seems, comes down the line. There are people at the bottom that say, I have and you don't. I get unemployment insurance and you don't. I get my welfare check and you don't. Therefore, I have something you don't. And that's also very much people that have the judgment, I had the good fortune to be born on the right side of the border, the line, and you weren't, and therefore I have something you don't. So we don't think as humanitarians to be really caring and concerned about others who by fate didn't have it as good. They didn't, you know, their check ran out or they didn't have the good fortune to be born in the right place. So being decent people, if we can, I like what your message. I think you were saying we need to learn to care, and that's my view.
All right.
I agree. So many great Americans were not born in the United States of America. I mean, from all
like our president. I'm sorry, I couldn't help myself. Just couldn't help myself.
Oh, Leslie, don't even go there. You're gonna scare up some people now. And actually, I disagree with that part of the Constitution. It is part of the Constitution, so I have to respect it. But I don't think you.
Well, you know what? I used to agree with it because I didn't want Arnold Schwarzenegger to have a chance after what he did as governor. But having an adopted son born in another country,
yeah.
I do. And speaking, Mark, can you explain the Ted Cruz thing? He was born in Is it because I know when you're born in another country, biologically, and your parents are both Americans, you're an American. So if you are born outside the United States, you can be president if your parents are both American, or no?
It is an unanswered question that the courts have never addressed. Does natural born citizen mean you have to be born within the 50 states? And by the way, John McCain was not. He was born in the Panama Canal Zone. Or does it mean that you're a natural born America because at the moment of your birth, you're American because one of your parents are American? It has never been addressed by the courts. And we really don't know the answer. I do know that someone brought up in a very low court the question of John McCain being born in the Panama Canal Zone, and the courts dismissed it. We just don't know the answer to that question.
Okay. And then I also wanted to talk about border security. We don't have the funds to build a wall. And I think it would be horrific to do that, a nation that has prided itself on having open borders. But at the same time, even if we could build a fence between the United States and the Mexican border, nearly 2,000 miles, that wouldn't stop the influx of illegal immigration, correct? I mean, because it's not just coming from Mexico. I mean, we have tons of people in these containers coming in through the ports from other nations as well.
Exactly. About half of all undocumented immigrants do not come across the southern border. Some, as Michael pointed out, come across the northern border, but the vast majority come here by plane. They don't even come here by ship. They come here by plane. They stay. Maybe they have a student visa. Maybe they have a work visa. Maybe they're just visiting as tourists. They have a tourist visa. They come, and their visa runs out, and they don't go home. And that's half of them. And if you don't want to start, you can't build a wall around our airports, and you can't prevent foreigners from coming here to work, study, or be tourists. So a wall would even solve half the problem.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Dave, for your call. Mark, my co-host, Levine, on the East Coast, I, Leslie Marshall, will be back right after this. Don't go away. We're going to set you free. I'm Leslie Marshall. He's Mark Levine. We co-host Hour 2 every Thursday. And if you look at your clock and say, Leslie, it's Hour 3 with your show the way it is right now, Monday through Friday, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern. Little hints that you will see in here. Mark is my co-host every Thursday, hour two, and tonight he's blessed us to be here, hour three as well. A lot of topics to talk about. He, a former legislative counsel to Democratic Congressman Barney Frank in the House Judiciary, Homeland Security, and Financial Services Committees. He currently hosts the Washington-based radio television talk show, The Inside Scoop, and this is the Inside Scoop edition of the Leslie Marshall Show on Thursdays, and tonight, hour three, not just two. Also, the Ruckus Caucus on Pacifica Radio, that's WPFW 89.3 FM in D.C. He frequently appears on Fox, MSNBC, CNN, Fox Biz, and CNN. CNBC. He's tangled with everyone from Bill O'Reilly on the right to his Pacifica co-host and moi, Leslie Marshall, on the left. Follow me on Twitter at Leslie Marshall. Follow him at Mark Levine Talk. Check out his website, marklevinetalk.com, and go to mine, lesliemarshallshow.com. And you can call us in this and every hour, 888-6-LESLIE. 888-653-7543 is the number. Without further ado, my co-host in D.C. on the East Coast, while I here on the left coast, the West Coast, L.A., Leslie Marshall. Mark, thank you for holding. Welcome back. Hour three, the two of us. Any more to say on the immigration issue, or should we move on? Because I know we
Let's move on. We got a lot of topics to talk about.
Okay. Let me just see. Well, I guess we'll just move on. I'll forget the tweets on that, and they can like email me nasty.
Or we could do a tweet or so. Up to you.
Let me see. Did I tell you that there was a woman last week that said just shoot all of them, kill all of the children? Because that's what they did in Persia, you know, the 300 war. Swear to God. I don't think she was joking, you know, either. You know,
I had a woman from Chicago call when I hosted your show last week that said that she wouldn't care if somebody beat their children in front of them. If they gave good dry cleaning, she'd go back to that dry cleaners. I just wonder what people say sometimes.
Julianne, I think, speaks from where we speak. And I love the fact that you said we need to decide who we are as a nation, as Americans. She said leadership needs to speak with compassion and call them children and actually talk about the deadly trip and the risks. Why, in many cases, if they stay in their home countries, they'd begin filling mass graves. DH2O says you fix by sending them back. If we can afford to fly them all over this country, then we can afford to send them home. Where does this caca come from? Where does this caca come from? Where are we flying them all over the country? Oh, to the detention centers?
Well, yeah, I mean, yes, but usually their family will pick them up and take them. But, yeah, sometimes we have to put them in detention centers. That's right. You know, here's the thing. People don't want them, apparently. The conservatives don't want them released on the streets of El Paso or wherever they cross, or San Diego. So they want them in detention centers, and then they complain about the cost of the detention centers. Most of these kids just want a chance to live and survive, and just like our ancestors did.
And there's a woman here, Liberty Lover, and she, you know, she talks about, you know, what kind of a parent would send them here. Now, you address that, but we do have to address, as I mentioned, just one example. There are children coming here who don't have parents.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so if the parents are dead, how can they send them?
You know, there are people that just don't have any compassion. And to me, that's what America's all about. So we just have a fundamentally different idea of what America's about.
And you were speaking, I'm curious if
she was a descendant of Native Americans, because as far as I'm concerned, they're the only people who have a right to complain about immigrants.
Very good point. When you were talking about the Holocaust and what parents did with their children, you were talking about the Kinder transport as an example, correct?
There were lots of examples. Actually, there was an interesting 60 Minutes just a few weeks ago about a 104-year-old British man who managed to save 600 children's lives, and the parents would send the children to them because the children survived, and of course the parents were all gassed.
Yeah, and I've seen documentaries with the adults today that lived. Some were reunited with their parents who survived. Some of them never did. Some of them loved the family that was taking care of them. Some of them were abused. Some of them felt like they were slaves. I can't imagine, as the mother of a 6 and 7-year-old, doing that. But if any, I think almost, not any, but almost, not all, unfortunately, any parent would. I'd walk through a burning building for my children. I'd stand in front of a locomotive or a bullet for my children. So,
that's what these parents did.
Well, the other thing is, Mark, come on. If my kids were hungry and I couldn't feed them here, and it was so violent, and I had a relative somewhere else, and I could sneak in and maybe provide a better life, you bet your ass I'd do it.
Of course you would.
We all would. Do you think that we have it so good that we're so high and mighty? We always talk about people like Hillary Clinton or whatever are out of touch. Are we out of touch, Mark?
I think we are. I think we forget what the rest of the world is like. I think the people that complain about our president or complain about America forget how lucky we are. I mean, I am so happy by the sheer accident of the fact that I was born right here in the United States of America, the greatest country on earth. I'm so lucky to think that I could have been born, you know, poor in India or Africa or China or Bangladesh. There's so many, or Syria, for God's sake. There's so many awful places, and yet I'm here, and America is far from perfect. We talk about its imperfections all the time, as we should, but let's never, ever doubt that how lucky we are to be American.
Oh, absolutely. We have other issues to talk about tonight, and let's get to some of those. And moving on, I guess we should just check if there are any more tweets on this.
Let's skip to the troubled teen industry, because that relates to children too, and then we'll do the other stuff.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, that story is just absolutely. Oh, you know, actually, I do want to talk about a couple. National Guard, talk to me about how this, because I feel, okay, well, that's nice to secure a border or help with the border. It won't even fully secure the border. Does nothing to address all of these cost and legal issues and backlog in immigration courts, correct?
People talk about securing the border as if they're afraid of terrorists crossing the border. The vast, vast, vast majority of terrorists that came to the United States from a foreign country came here by airplane. I know of only a couple examples, proven examples, of terrorists that have crossed the border, and both came from Canada. One went to Vermont and one went to Seattle. I know tried to bomb the Los Angeles airport in 2000. Those are terrorists that came from across the border, and they came across the Canadian border. Border security has nothing to do with terrorism. It has to do with the fact that Republicans don't want more immigrants in this country. And that's fine. They should just say it. They shouldn't call it border security. They should call it "we hate immigrants." And just be honest about it.
Absolutely. No question there. Now, you said to jump ahead of that story. This story was very interesting, and I did read it when you sent it earlier. Thank you. It's by Zoe Schlanger, and it is in Newsweek, and it's entitled "Where American Teens Were Abused in the Name of God." And I think some of us don't realize how so much of this happens in modern day. And I say that because the article starts out with a month and a date, January 1990, not 1890, 1990, and talks about a 15-year-old named Deidre on a plane to the Dominican Republic. She lived in the Mississippi Delta. She persuaded her parents, who were fundamentalist Christians, to send her to a boarding school there. And they chose something called Escuela Caribe, which was a Christian therapeutic residential boarding facility in the Dominican Republic run by an American religious organization. That organization is called New Horizons Youth Ministries. Let's talk about this, because some of the kids who went there that are portrayed in a documentary called Kidnapped for Christ thought that schools or at places like this, Escuela Caribe, would be a way to escape abuse in their own lives, correct?
Sure, and many times they're sent by their parents. Sometimes their parents themselves have abused them, but the vast majority of these places turn out to be abusive themselves. The reason I sent you that particular article, Leslie, is because I'm featured in that documentary on Showtime. To say I'm featured, I don't want to exaggerate. They probably have me on for about 20 seconds. I don't know. I don't get Showtime. I'll have to ask my friends who taped it. But it's going to be shown all this month. It's called Kidnapped for Christ, and it's about these abusive treatment centers, which are not just in the Dominican Republic. They're actually all over the United States. This one, they happen to be able to treat people worse outside the country, but there's still a tremendous amount of rape and abuse and horror that goes on right in the United States to American kids. Kidnapped for Christ focuses on many kids, and like Deirdre, but also a young man by the name of David, whose parents tried to abuse him out of being gay. So they sent him to this place where they mistreated him in the hope that they could, I guess, beat it out of him. I've actually been on your show hosting, and Mark Grimaldi will tell you, some of the most powerful shows I've done are dealing with the survivors and talking about these awful institutions all across the country. I've been focusing on them, frankly, since 2005. It's one of my big issues. And so I'm really glad that finally we've got something in the national media on Showtime to document these abuses and to try to prevent them.
Wow. I wish I had not missed it, but obviously I had to because you wouldn't have been filling in for me had I been here.
Well, it's going to be on several times. If you get, and I don't get Showtime myself, so I, like I said, my friends are going to tape it, but it's going to be on Showtime. It's called Kidnap for Christ. Apparently it's going to be on for about a month. So just check your local listings if you get Showtime. And I don't want to say they featured me is a little, I don't know how much time I have on the air. In the trailer,
You never know, yeah.
So I haven't seen the documentary yet, but you will see my face, and I do talk about it. And of course, you know, my experiences as a lawyer and an expert and an advocate, I don't have any. Well, the only personal stories I have is how I've helped free three of these kids, but I could only free them because they turned 18. And the dirty little secret about American law is that you have no rights until you're 18.
These kids aren't just sent for being abused or because they're unruly teens. They're also sent because some of them are gay.
Well, sure. They're sent for being gay. They're sent because they talk back to their parents. They're sent because they got bad grades. They're sent because they tried marijuana. They're sent because, in one case that I talked about on radio, the young woman, it's a particularly horrific case, she was raped by her uncle, her mother's brother. And she told her mother's, she was a straight A student, well, A and B student, and she was 15 years old. She told her mother that her uncle, her mother's brother, had raped her, and her mother did not want to believe that her own brother would do such a horrific thing. So she didn't believe her daughter, and she sent her daughter away to a place where she was further raped several times by the people there. It just, and these places have barbed wire. That, you know, these kids have, many of them have done nothing wrong. None of them have been convicted of a crime. They're stuck behind barbed wire. They would have more rights in prison. In prison, you have a right to a lawyer. In prison, you have a right to complain about abuse, to complain about rape. In prison, you have the right to call your parents. These kids have none of those rights. Their calls are monitored, and until they're 18, there's nothing legally we can do for them. Now, I have happened to free three young people from these places. There's about 10,000 kids in these places today in America. And Mark Romaldi will remember a very exciting show we did to free a young man named Patrick, who was kidnapped from Massachusetts to Utah. And I could free him only because he turned 18. And the city of Provo, Utah, refused to release him until I threatened to go on national radio. So I used your national radio, Leslie, and Patrick was freed within 24 hours of my threat. But this is a big problem, and it's something I've been fighting for years, and it's so gratifying to finally see it get the national attention it deserves.
Oh, most definitely. How did this become near and dear to your heart? Very briefly, we have less than 60 seconds before break.
Sure. I started in 2005 as an accident. I found out that one of Bush cronies by the name of Mel Sembler was our ambassador to Italy and Australia, and I was exposing how bad Bush was by putting this guy who basically tortured children as his ambassador. I then looked further, deeper into it and found out that it wasn't just this guy Sembler. This was a major problem in 47 states affecting tens of thousands of Americans.
Wow. Just amazing. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, you decide when we come back, Mark, continue and talk a little bit more about this or move on to yet another topic. You know, it's the shortest segment in the hour. And then we have another 30 minutes after that in the final and third hour with my buddy this Thursday night, Mark Levine. He's Mark Levine on the East Coast. I'm Leslie Marshall on the West. Follow him on Twitter at Mark Levine Talk, me at Leslie Marshall. Don't go away. Right back after this. And we're back. I'm back with my buddy and co-host every Thursday, Hour 2. And tonight, Hour 3, Mark Levine in Washington, D.C., host of the Inside Scoop and the Ruckus Caucus. I, Leslie Marshall, in Los Angeles. Mark, thanks for holding. Welcome back. Should we talk a bit more about this, move on to another?
Let's talk a little bit more about this. I know it's a short segment. I also know that you've asked me to fill in for you sometime later in July, and I plan to do more shows on it. So this will be sort of a preview, because very few Americans even realize.
Well, first of all, one of the things I'd like you to do very quickly is so that people that cannot just or do not just connect the dots, can you connect the dots as to, I mean, obviously parents sending their children for what they think is a better life and a greater good. So in other words, your point is it's not just people in Central America doing this to the United States. It's Americans sending their children to other countries. And sometimes, you know, these children in many of these situations in this documentary are abused, as many of these children that are being sent from Central America, whether they're fleeing abuse like these Americans in these, in this documentary that, are, you know, they're speaking of the reason if they're not being sent to be good or to stop being gay, that, you know, parents will do and go to extreme measures to, they feel, protect their children, and that often these children are abused on way or when they arrive to the promised land.
Yeah, I mean, some parents are simply misled. They're naive. Parents, I do think, have this vast desire to help their kids in any way they can. And that means sometimes shipping your kids to safety. It also means, ironically, sadly, sometimes shipping your kids to danger because maybe you're a fundamentalist Christian and you want your children to be better in that respect, and you don't realize that you're trying to save your children from maybe a sexual lifestyle, and then you send her to a minister that rapes her. I mean, the irony is just truly, truly severe. Obviously, and by the way, it's not just religion. It's also sometimes kids go crazy when they find out that their 16-year-old tried marijuana, so they'll send their 16-year-old to a drug treatment center that also doesn't have these protections. The heart of it is, the way you can tell an abusive center from a non-abusive center is the abusive ones do not allow free communication. They do not allow unmonitored communication between children and parents, between children and 911, between children and the police. They monitor the communications just as much as North Korea would do, and that's how you know they can't be trusted. But it's a multi-billion dollar industry. Mitt Romney, in fact, his firm, Bain Industries, whatever, right. Bain owns a large group of this called Aspen. There's a whole many parts of this story, but basically it's people making a ton of money abusing children.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with Mark Levine on the East Coast, my co-host here on the Inside Edition of the Leslie Marshall Inside Edition, the Inside Scoop Edition of the Leslie Marshall Show. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking about yet another topic. What will it be? Mark will pick it. Say, I'm fair. We will be back right after this. Don't go away. Hey there, America. I'm Leslie Marshall. Welcome or welcome back. We welcome back my co-host and partner in crime on Thursdays, hour two normally, and hour three tonight, Mark Levine on the East Coast in D.C., host of the Inside Scoop and the Ruckus Caucus in Washington. But tonight, it's the Inside Scoop edition of the Leslie Marshall Show. I am she on the West Coast in L.A. Mark, thanks for holding. Welcome back. What should we talk about? I think one of the things we could talk about, if you want to talk next about Israel and the conflict between them and what's going on.
Now, let's talk about that.
And this is an issue that you and I may disagree on, I think.
That's true. We may.
All right, so
we have in the past.
Yes, I know. Okay, so first of all, you know, I have the idea that, you know, being half Jewish, that all Jews are brainwashed to a degree that, you know, Israel's wonderful and can do no wrong, and, you know, Palestinians are all bad and terrorist and blah blah blah. But I know that you're not that ignorant, and I say that because not all Palestinians are terrorists, not all Palestinians are Muslim, not all of them voted for Hamas. And when we look at the reasons they did, I can't blame them. I always say, if you're hungry and Satan gives you a sandwich, you'll follow him. And a third of them are Christian. But that aside, talk to me about your take about this situation.
I don't think
situation.
It's a third of Christian. I think it's more like 1 in 10, but that's okay.
Well, that's not the stats I find. But anyway, go ahead.
It doesn't really matter whether two-thirds are Muslim or 90% are Muslim. There are certainly Christian Palestinians, but I don't think it's as high as 1 in 3. But anyway, so as we all know, if you've been watching the news, Gaza is now raining rockets all over Israeli cities, including its largest city, Tel Aviv, its capital, Jerusalem, its third-largest city, Haifa, is apparently within rocket range. Basically, more than half of the Israeli population is in rocket range. Now, they do have this Iron Dome missile system, which Israel designed with the United States, that thankfully has been able to shoot down enough of the rockets to prevent catastrophe, because if one of those rockets gets through in a major city, imagine if someone, you know, dropped a missile on Manhattan, think how many people would die there. They've even tried to shoot Israeli nuclear facilities, or at least what we think are, because Israel's never admitted to have a nuclear power, but everyone thinks they do. Presumably, they want to try to blow them up and cause nuclear conflagration. So Hamas is not very nice. For those that think that Hamas is just after Jews, rest assured that they also shoot weapons into Muslim and Christian areas of Israel. While they're mostly after Jews, they certainly don't hesitate to kill Muslims and Christians, both in Israel and in Gaza. Now, Israel is in a very difficult position. I would argue they must respond, that no country on earth can stand to have a rocket shot every 10 minutes a day, every 10 minutes, and their entire population, or at least more than half of the population, under air raid sirens where they have between 15 and 90 seconds to get to an air shelter. You just can't live that way. So I do think Israel has to respond. The question is, how can Israel respond? And Israel has been trying, I think, very, very hard to kill the terrorists while not harming the innocent. And of course there are both in Gaza. And
yeah, but
course,
we need to look at history, which is, you know, there were, you know, Palestinians that hurt Israeli kids, but now, you know, we have two kids, you know, one kid was killed, abducted a Palestinian teen, and we have an American Palestinian that's been beaten.
Right. Now, this is separate from the what's going on with Hamas right now. But yeah, so let's back up there. So three.
Why is that separate from what's been going on with Hamas? I mean, my understanding is the retaliation that Hamas is attacking in retaliation for the death of the Palestinian teen that was abducted and killed.
Let's start at the beginning then. There were three Israeli teens. One was an American, two Israeli, and one had dual American-Israeli citizenship, that were kidnapped and murdered by Hamas. It's not clear whether they were originally intended to be murdered. They may have been kidnapped in the hopes to get back prisoners. They called 911. The people found them and kidnapped these children, these Israeli children. That's horrific. At the time, there were some Palestinians who called the murders horrific. There were others who praised them, including Hamas, praised the kidnapping, and many waved three around as a signal that, you know, we're really glad these three Israeli teens were murdered. Then some Jewish fanatic, or a group of them, it appears to be a group of six, including some Israeli teens, did the same awful thing. They kidnapped a Palestinian boy, an innocent Palestinian boy, and they brutally murdered him, presumably as payback and revenge. And that, of course, is just as disgusting and horrendous and awful and evil as the people who killed the Israeli teenagers. Israel, to its credit, has managed to capture the six they think are behind this, and I'm sure they'll be tried and duly prosecuted as they should be, to the fullest extent of the law. To Mahmoud Abbas's discredit, he has not used any resources to capture the people who killed the three Israeli teens. So Israel set about to punish Hamas, which did the kidnapping, and in return, Hamas is now raining these rockets down on Israeli cities. And that's where we are today. And I don't think you disagree with that rendition of the facts.
We're
talking about the kid beaten up. We should mention that too. So this boy's cousin is an American from Tampa, I believe, who was visiting family, and he snuck out of his house. His mother said that she tried to keep him from joining protests, but he jumped out a window, apparently wrapped his face in a mask, and joined with people who were throwing Molotov cocktails, firebombs on police. The police responded, arrested the people who were doing that, and then proceeded apparently to beat this American boy way beyond the point of arrest. If he did what they said he did, they have every legitimate right to arrest him and throw him in jail. They certainly don't have a right to beat him any more than the police who beat Rodney King, and that's being investigated as well. So it's a whole lot of bad stuff. But the heart of it is, I think at this point, Israel has no choice but to take action to prevent the missiles, the rockets being rained down on all its cities.
But here's one of the things that I have a problem with, okay? When the president says Israel has a right to defend themselves, I mean, anybody does. But I mean, quite frankly, even though they are a terrorist organization, they have not revoked their charter and not recognized Israel as a state, or the state of Israel. Recognized it as such and what it is, Hamas. Whether we like it or not, they were elected by, you know, a number of people, at least on one side of the Palestinian territory. And don't they have a right to defend themselves and their people as well?
Well, first of all, let's recall they were elected in 2006. They were elected with about 40-something percent of the vote. They were legitimately elected, but they haven't had an election since then. By those same standards, of course, Adolf Hitler was legitimately elected. He also got 40-something percent of the vote, and he also stopped future elections. So one election does not make you legitimate. To me, what makes you legitimate is having regular elections, not just the first one. But be that as it may, Israel is not attacking Hamas because Hamas is a brutal dictatorship. Israel's attacking Hamas because Hamas is raining rockets down on Israeli cities. Israel, of course, said to Hamas, we'll give you quiet if you give us quiet. And in response, they're now sending a missile every 10 minutes. I mean, 130 rockets a day over Israel's largest cities. So, you know, Israel has offered a ceasefire to Hamas. Hamas has said words I can't say on the radio and is now attacking. And I think Hamas, don't get me wrong, they want an invasion. They want Israel to counterattack. They are not popular in Gaza because they rule brutally and because they kill a large number of Palestinians who oppose their brutal rule. And so they want a foreign enemy in order to get support. But that be that as it may, I don't think there's any country on this planet that could have rockets raining on its cities, 130 a day, that didn't respond militarily. I think every single country on Earth would do that, and I think Israel has no choice but to, and they should be very careful to kill as few civilians as possible, but it likely will happen. It is war.
You know, I personally feel that nothing's going to stop. There's never going to be peace in the Middle East in our time, maybe not even, you know, until the end of the world.
Probably not.
And I think it's a shame because, I mean, innocent children on both sides are being killed.
Right. That's right.
And a lot of this has to do with, to me, it has to do with not just who, you know, feels the land belongs to them. And I've not only been to Israel, I've lived in Israel. And, you know, I'm like, you know, look, if we can come up with GPS, you don't think God can find you? For crying out loud, move to the Caribbean or something, you know. I personally don't understand the appeal of you know, Israel. I understand the historical reference, but, you know, I don't think, personally, I don't think that you need to be, I think a lot of things in the Old and New Testament are very symbolic.
I have a question for you, Leslie, because you're talking about more in historical perspectives, and Mark's talking more about the specific current events from it. If you are in Israel, mm-hmm. and you're in the current position, knowing their history, but also knowing the, you know, all the facts that, you know, we've laid out tonight and talked about, what would you do if this was happening? Like, how would you handle this?
Ask me, Mark.
Oh, wait,
yeah.
Let Mark say it, and then
okay,
Leslie,
go ahead,
maybe
Mark.
He's doing a qualifier. I don't know what he's saying.
I just said, Leslie, you've been elected Prime Minister of Israel. Congratulations.
There
what
you go.
Do you do now?
I would agree to a two-state solution, which I think is inevitable, and I don't think that'll necessarily bring peace, but I think it'll bring more peace than there is now.
Yeah, but see, it's easy to say that, but remember, Hamas thinks that if they have a
it's not easy to say that. I mean, that's what I would do. Netanyahu doesn't want a two-state solution.
No, but remember, Hamas has said that for every land they liberate, they will use that land to kill more until there are no more Jews in the Middle East. So they're
yeah, but Mark.
Right.
Hitler said things. He's gone. It didn't happen. Oh, Osama bin Laden said things. He's
well,
gone.
Hitler
it didn't happen.
A lot before he was gone.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
I don't think we should discount what he said. He set out to do what.
But
he
Mark,
did,
if you don't, if you don't have a two-state solution, what you have will continue. So what would you do?
I support a two-state solution as well, but I think we need to be clear that Hamas is very different from Palestinians who I think Israel should negotiate with. Hamas cannot
Thank you. Well, thank you. Thank you for that. But I think you would agree that if you watch us in the American press, not you and I, but American press reports as opposed to the BBC, American press paints all Palestinians as Hamas and as terrorists for the most part. I mean, I always say the reason Christians support Israel is they hate the Muslims more than the Jews. If it were just the Jews, the Christians would throw all of you to hell in a handbag because you killed Jesus. Let's be honest.
Look, there's all kinds of Palestinians, and no doubt that the most mistreated Palestinians in the world are the one. Well, I don't know about the most in the world because there's some terribly mistreated Palestinians in Syria, Lebanon, and Iraq. But let's just say that the Palestinians living under the boot of Hamas are living miserable lives. no question about it. But let's not pretend that a two-state solution would solve the problem. Remember, the Arabs had the West Bank and Gaza, and they continued to attack Israel from that point. So it's not like giving up land leads to peace. Israel gave up Gaza and gave hundreds of millions of dollars and wished them well and was building an airport and a seaport, and Hamas took it over and is now raining missiles into Israel. So don't pretend. I think it's a mistake when people say land for peace when Israel has a history of giving up land and getting more war. There's no such thing as land for peace, because Israel can give up land. They just can't get peace ever, no matter how much land they give up. And that, to me, is the heart of the problem.
Well, I hear you there, but I got to say, I mean, wars or not, it's always been bothered that a number of people, thousands, millions, that were displaced, put in refugee camps and didn't have a place to call home, came to Israel and did the exact same thing. Karma's a bitch, you know? We'll be back. Mark Levine is my co-host. If you want to join us, 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. Will we continue to talk about this, or will we talk about another issue? Stick around and you'll find out. And we're back. I'm Leslie Marshall. Welcome or welcome back. Only true democracy in talk radio of four and by you, the people. This is the inside scoop edition of the Leslie Marshall Show with Mark Levine on the East Coast and I, Leslie Marshall, on the West. I just need the information. We have a caller that wants to join in, I think, on the Israel topic before we move on to another. Can you guys tell me? Oh, Doug from the South, he's ready? Yeah, I don't have it here, and I am. Last one I have is Dave in Humboldt County, line one. Doug from the South, thank you for joining us. Question or comment for Mark and I tonight on this issue. How you doing?
Well, I've been following you on Twitter quite a bit lately. You're one of my favorite liberal talk show hosts, if I can find a liberal talk show host that I agree with. There are some things you're very reasonable about, and I like listening to you. But I have to tell you about Israel. I absolutely totally agree with Mark Levin, okay? It comes to a point where if you are being bullied, irrespective of how the circumstances got there, basically Israel's being bullied. They'll tell you to back off. They'll ask you to back off. They'll meet you halfway. They'll do the things they need to do. If a crime is committed against a Palestinian, they'll take and they'll prosecute the perpetrators, whether they're Jews or Christians or Palestinians. On the other hand, Hamas glorifies killing of Jews. You can't. There's no moral equivalent there. So what?
Well, I disagree. I think you know whether it's people who wear red shoes or people who are Jewish or people who are gay or people who are American. Murder is murder. Killing is killing. Whoever's doing is a murderer. I don't care if you want to put a name on it or a title on it. Killing is killing, and it is wrong, in my opinion.
Well, let's go generic. Without being disrespectful, if I walk up to you and poke you in the chest, how many times are you going to allow me to poke you before you say, look, do it again, I'm going to knock your butt in the dirt? How many times?
Well. First of all, this—that's a very no. I hear you asking me a question. Let me answer.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. One, the way I live, and I teach my children to live this way, I believe in Gandhi, but I believe in defending yourself. So here's how it would go. I would say to you, I don't want you to touch me.
Mm-hmm.
I do not appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
This is not the way to solve this problem, and I must let you know and warn you. If you do that again, I will defend myself. And I teach my children that. I tell my son if somebody hits him to turn the other cheek, but to tell that person if you hit me again, I'm going to sock you. Okay, so
what?
Wait. You know, this is what my problem is. Hamas is a terrorist organization, no question. I'm not going to defend them or their actions. However, when Palestinians attack Israelis, it's terrorism. When Israelis attack Palestinians, it's defending themselves. And I find having lived there and seen with my own eyes that is not always true, the hypocrisy. Abduction, whether the abduction of the Palestinian team was in retaliation for the abduction of the Israeli That is wrong. Additionally, Israel, in a sense, enables Hamas. And let me give you an example. They will have one soldier. They'll trade 450 prisoners for one soldier, and they've done this for years, and they keep
and
doing
I'm against
it.
That. And I've they, always been
that's stupid.
That.
That's not left or right, Christian, Jewish, Muslim. That's
right.
Just
it's
plain
the same
stupid.
Thing for trading, you know, the terrorists down in Gitmo for Bergdahl. Okay, they shouldn't have done it.
I don't think 5-1, but I do think a trade had to be made. But I agree with you, not 5-1. But that's a whole different story. We talked about that before. That's not what we're talking about now. So what I'm saying is that if you enable your enemy, then you cannot be surprised when your enemy attacks.
Here's the difference. No one is defending the Israeli vicious murderer who killed the innocent Palestinian child.
Now, that's not true. Not true at all, Mark. And I'll be glad to email you a number of blogs, articles, etc. that do.
I haven't heard anyone defend the killing of that innocent Arab child.
Oh, my God. Love. You're living in a glass bubble with rose-colored glass around it. Because the bottom line is, like I said, the Palestinians are hated more than the Israelis by Jews and Christians pretty much worldwide. Why is it just like there are people that'll say kill all of these little brown illegal immigrants? There's a justification that some people have in the killing of a Palestinian child.
All right, I get the Trump card. We have 40 seconds left, so you guys have to kiss and make up in 40 seconds. Go.
All right, we're all kissing.
Agree you should judge people by their actions, not by their religion or the color of their skin.
But you can't always judge people by the actions of their politicians or terrorist organizations that are acting and they say on their behalf. Mark, you know I love you. Mark Levine, my co-host and to our caller. Thank you. I'm sorry, was his name David? Dan? I forgot.
Doug.
I knew it began with a D. I'm sorry for renaming you there, Doug. And I'm sorry we're out of time. We'll talk again. We will be back tomorrow. We hope you will as well. Same bat time, same bat channel for now. Monday through Friday, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern. Thank you to Mark and Ryan, my producers this evening. We hope you have a great night. And check me out tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern on Fox News Channel on America's Newsroom. Don't go. Do go away. Have a great night. Come back.